Hey, hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 1185. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, just another weekend of fun had around these parts. Summer winding down, I suppose. Without children, I feel like time is a flat circle. You don't really think about the seasons until the weather actually changes. There is that. Yeah, there wasn't a ton of wrestling on this weekend. I mean, we've kind of discussed how we can be inundated from time to time. This was not one of them. We just had SmackDown and Raw and maybe Collision to cover since I actually watched that for a change. We put our heads together and said the Roman Reigns, Bloodline, Solo Sikoa, and LA Knight segment to end Raw was really the biggest angle of the week within WWE for sure.
For sure it was, yes.
Because there were a lot of interesting things about this. I obviously the first is it was something, I don't know if you and I discussed it or Jeremy was the one that brought it up, that the wording of bringing Solo Sikoa to Roman Reigns always was a little left open for interpretation here. He never committed to kneeling down and saying he will obey the tribal chief, Solo, that is. That particular wording did come back to bite the Usos in the ass really here in this whole situation. And there were a couple other things that were pretty interesting about the angle too, because Jacob Fatu, his loyalty had gotten a little bit questioned during the segment here.
Yeah, it did get questioned, yes.
So he kind of turned a little bit of a blind eye to a couple of the items, but not a blind eye to other items. There were a lot of, well, and really the biggest development, maybe of them all, and something that we've been marveling at. Somehow the Bloodline has escaped booing. And this is the first time that we have really heard more of a sustained boo for the Bloodline and the OTC version especially. This whole time in the WWE, like, I mean, we're talking about it at least as early as WrestleMania, talking about how much of a dickhead he was being in the build up to WrestleMania. So this has been at least a month's long thing at a minimum.
We've been building to this, it feels like, for a bit. I mean, the stuff with Punk was, a lot of tension between two baby faces. They were both, taking stiff shots with each other. Then
Yeah, and
Roman
they're
Reigns
both kind of
wins.
arrogant.
And we'll get to Punk later. He definitely had his own unique confrontation with someone that I think the crowd didn't know how to take very or know how they were supposed to react to it. So we'll get to him. But with Roman Reigns, ever since WrestleMania then, because when that was over, you would have just expected that Roman Reigns is just gonna go back to facing heels pretty much. He's gonna face your Braun Breakers, your Gunthers, those are the people
Oh.
he's gonna work with after he wins this world championship. But
Yeah.
no, we do this, couple month long thing with Jacob Fatu, who had already turned face, and Roman was, essentially, being a dick to him. The Usos were being dicks. And then we get past that, and then we get to Seth Rollins. And again, Seth Rollins, solidly a babyface, especially after upon his return.
Oh,
Roman
yeah.
Reigns being a bigger asshole. Then we get past that, and then we get to this. The real turning point began with that Jacob Fatu Royce Keyes match, as Roman Reigns gleefully sicked, Jacob Fatu on this man who went on a stretcher, and Roman Reigns completely supported the whole thing. There have been other moments like that, but I think that was the big recent one, and that, of course, is the last time we see Roman Reigns on TV. And now we get to this where he's just, again, being a complete asshole to his brother, who has essentially turned face. He's six Jacob Fatu on him. He's, berating him. Just there's no ambiguity anymore about this Roman Reigns character. Maybe through the spring, then maybe you could say that there was, but this is just him. Just be, this is just heinous, evil stuff he's doing now.
Yeah, he has definitely turned a corner, especially with this segment. If you're trying to accept someone back in with open arms, this definitely did not feel like that was even cl remotely close to open arms.
No, it did not. And then, and then LA Knight gets involved. The Usos, who are just come back. I've said it a million times, it feels like, since WrestleMania, but they are just bad. They are just complete toadies. I mean, the former world champion Jey Uso is just dancing out there like a goof, just completely just reveling in being a sidekick.
And also himself being a bit of a dick the whole time.
Yes,
This
yes,
the
yes.
whole night at least, like really rubbing it in to Solo that he lost the match. Like he really made sure he was not forgetting that. And I
And
mean.
rubbing it into Jacob Fatu that he's bringing Solo back to the family, and when Jacob failed. So, they're now okay. Again, classic heel, just failure to achieve your goal to take out LA Knight. Taking the classic, pratfalls over the top rope. Roman Reigns is getting his comeuppance like a heel, like any heel would. And then, of course, they finally jump on him, get on him. Wait, okay, I'm trying to remember what happened first. Jacob attacks LA Knight. Then Roman Reigns berates Jacob Fatu for not listening to him for attacking LA Knight when he was never supposed to. Then is when the Usos get back in the ring, and that's when they want Solo to hit LA Knight with a spike. Again, Roman Reigns want de de demanding that that it that his cousin take out his new friend and prove his loyalty like a heel. And then Roman Reigns takes the Samoan spike himself to a pretty good pop. Or a very shocked reaction. I don't think people expected Roman Reigns to, even though it's the classic setup of the classic misdirection setup, people still didn't think that, Solo was gonna get that much on Roman Reigns, or that anyone was gonna get that much on Roman Reigns at this point.
Yeah, I was a little bit for sure in that territory where it's just like, they really gonna give this to Solo? Like, it seemed like a wild spot, especially after getting Jacob Fatu into the fold. Like, it seemed like they were really, for whatever reason, insistent on this super bloodline kind of situation. With adding Jacob and keeping Solo in there, so as a just a unreasonable five-man group, honestly, it's not quite the Don Callis family, but we're trying to build towards that, it would seem.
Anyway, then LA Knight and Solo clean house of the Usos. Jacob is just standing there, not doing anything because he's doing what he's told. He's not getting involved in this now, which.
Which again, like it leaves some additional questions that that is kind of interesting. Like it if they hadn't had the earlier part that you described, like this would be even more intriguing, but you can definitely understand where Jacob's coming from in this situation. He's
Yeah,
just like,
effectively.
okay, yep, screw it. Like he
What do you
told
want
me
me
to
to do?
just, yeah, he told me to stand by until I was given orders. Like, so I'm just standing by. I wasn't given any orders.
And then Roman Reigns attack, you know, well, attempts to Superman punch LA Knight, and then gets put into the BFT. You know, taking his big enemy's finish, getting his comeuppance like a
Oh.
good heel should. I mean, this was. Yeah, and of course, throughout this whole thing, the crowd reactions finally start changing to boo. You know, most people are booing. Some people don't know how to take it anymore because, at the end of the day, what has been so perplexing about this whole presentation of Roman and the Bloodline has been no one asked for this. People were happy to finally get to cheer Roman Reigns over the last 2 years. And of course, you don't get to do it as much as you want because he's not around that much. But now this summer, he's been around up more, and we're getting this version. We're getting asshole Roman Reigns back.
Yeah, and I mean, like you already said too, like we have really lost quite a fastball off of Jey Uso at this point. It's just wow, man. Like he's the one to take the biggest hit. I would say Jacob is next. Jimmy's just Jimmy at this point. Like that man's gonna have a contract for as long as his Samoan brothers are in the WWE, but whew, his rung on the ladder is not changing at this point. Or at least I'd be really shocked if it does. So yeah, like don't get what the idea is behind this group. You could say that the WWE needed heels, and I mean, I feel like we have argued that quite a bit. It feels like maybe you should have gone a little more overt with these guys ahead of, before now. I don't know if it just takes that long to actually turn someone these days. Because I mean, we have talked about how hard it is to stay over as a heel and how few people actually do it. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where they move with this thing. Because yeah, it does seem like Solo Sikoa and LA Knight are at least going to have each other's backs as far as that goes moving forward here. I'm not sure who gets the first next crack at Roman Reigns
I'm pretty sure it'll be
between the
LA
two.
Knight at my. I'm pretty sure it'll be LA Knight at Money in the Bank. Yes, Solo might be more and more in a supportive role. Yeah, I mean it's. I think if LA Knight wasn't as over as he is, this really this works mostly because of LA Knight, because people do want to cheer for LA Knight. He has a big fan base that, at this point wants to see him win the big one.
I mean, it's wild that we can say that we've been talking about it for years at this point.
It's
Because the
been,
man,
yeah, it's,
the
yeah.
man's been in the main event picture for 3 years and just hasn't seemed to be able to crack the code in getting to win the championship.
No.
And I can definitely see where. Was it an Unreal segment that got cut? A WWE Unreal segment that got cut that supposedly he was a little bit hot about? And I mean, I could only understand him getting more hot after Sammy's win in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I didn't catch that, but
Oh,
I mean
there was. I feel like there was some argument between him and Hunter that got cut from Unreal, or he didn't want added to Unreal, something like that.
LA Knight was very was very, has been very outspoken for quite a while. Before it, but really before this renewed push started,
No.
he was, lamenting his position, and they brought him, they brought him back up to a pretty high level right now. I mean, he is. I mean, Roman Reigns is going to defend the title against the winner of this Luchador tournament first in Mexico City, and then presumably LA Knight's going to be Money in the Bank. Sorry, everybody. Penta will not be defeating Roman Reigns for the World Heavyweight Championship in September. And sorry, everybody, if you're thinking anyone else is winning that damn tournament. If you're a big Dragon Lee fan, I'm sorry.
How dare you, sir? How dare you try to, is that that's a spoiler, not a prediction, I would assume from you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But yeah. I mean, it's gonna be a very interesting dynamic by the when we get to New Orleans for it. I guess so. How much momentum LA Knight's gonna have on his side, if there is, any kind of, from the external forces of the fans to the the internal boardroom or writers' room. Is there going to be some kind of a push to pull the trigger on having LA Knight win the title, even if it's something brief?
Yeah, I mean, Sammy is definitely an example. Jay really is even an example at this point. Even though he's gotten kicked back down a rung from that, I mean, they'll always be able to mention the championship reign, but oof, boy. It's that recline is not looking great at the current moment. But yeah, I mean, LA Knight could have a similar type reign as one of those two guys where it doesn't end up lasting long. He ends up losing it to one of the bigger names. And we move along from LA Knight, and he at least gets to say he was a world champion at some point. And then he keeps on just being popular and being in feuds every week. That man does a good job at showing up at his job.
But yeah, the the evolution of this bloodline has been interesting to watch because again, they've been essentially presented as heels. People never wanted the boo. By sheer force of will, they may have finally gotten what they wanted. But is it what the fans wanted? Do fans really want to boo Roman Reigns? I would think the answer is no, but if you keep presenting him like this, there's nothing likable about this Roman Reigns character. There's nothing he has gone back completely to. There's just nothing likable, nothing, maybe I don't know, maybe that cool isn't the right word, but there's just nothing admirable about the way Roman Reigns has been carrying himself for quite a while now.
No, and the routine hasn't really changed up at all. It's
No,
almost
and
surprising that that hasn't gotten old for more people.
I think it. I think for some, for a number of people, I think it is. I think everything since WrestleMania has felt like a rehash, and the only thing keeping it above water at this point may be LA Knight's involvement in it. As and
No.
some people starting to like Solo a bit. You can see
Oh.
some. You can see some good positive momentum on that front as well.
Yeah. Solo has definitely started to get a groundswell for whatever reason these last couple of weeks. They've let him kind of do the goofiness before now, but they've really let it rip here the last few weeks. Really, even including this segment. Him shooting fake guns at his brothers was something.
Well, it was definitely something.
Yeah, it's it is kind of it, it it's It did take a number of effects going into this to really turn the tide against Roman Reigns.
Oh yeah.
I guess I feel like this is going to be similar to something else happening over there on SmackDown a little bit, where you were talking about not wanting to boo someone. It made me think about Randy Orton,
Oh yeah, that's
people
a
n not wanting to boo him against Cody Rhodes, despite him, much like Roman Reigns, as we've discussed before, using some underhanded tactics in
Oh.
this fight.
Oh, this was never, I mean, turning Randy Orton was never the right idea. Really, it really wasn't. But we're here, and now we're being put into a situation where you basically, for the sake of R Co Cody Rhodes, you essentially have to put the match in Cody's hometown. Which is what we're doing.
Yes. We are waiting till Atlanta to get this done here. Cody just wanted a date out of Nick Aldis, if I'm not mistaken,
Yeah.
without looking at the review
And of
here.
course,
And
the office, and of course, as Sami Zayn pointed out, the office just giving the golden boy everything exactly what he wants.
Oh yeah, the Sammy character has definitely gotten some funny moments in here, and that surely is one of
Yeah.
them.
And but unfortunately, Sammy did not get his number one contendership for beating Cody Rhodes in a match because that match never got started as Randy Orton attacked Cody Rhodes and they ended up having a big brawl all a very good brawl all over the building. Got to give them credit for that.
Oh,
They had a pretty
yeah.
intense brawl.
Yeah, it was a fun segment, and I did like the Sami Zayn, what the hell is going on the whole time. Like, it's definitely one of those segments where they continue to give Sami Zayn reasons to complain.
Yes, they do.
So, conspiracy theory Sammy is somewhat back at this point, I would say.
Yeah.
They're not really conspiracy theories, but it's definitely a similar flair to it is his past character there. So yeah, that one's going to be an interesting feud to 'cause when is. Is Atlanta just a regular SmackDown, or was that the Sunday night's main event?
Atlanta Sunday is main event.
Okay. So, I feel like that's coming up in a few weeks here. So,
Yes, it is.
and I guess really to rewind to the whole beginning of our weekend of wrestling here. Chelsea Green announced well, it's never good news when the general manager of Insert Brand here is out here to start the show and asking for a champion to come out. We definitely saw quite a shiner on Chelsea Green. Evidently, there is an orbital bone fracture, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that, yes.
They were ready to strip her of the championship. Nick Aldis ends up relenting in the long run here and giving Chelsea Green 30 days to rest up before she needs to defend her championship. Boy, if we only did this with Liv Morgan.
If we only did this with Rhea Ripley.
Oh
Rhea Ripley got
yes.
2 months, but before the interim championship turned into the actual women's championship, because they've dropped that wording completely now that Rhea's probably going to be got gone for at least 6 months or whatever. In addition to the time she's already been out.
Yeah, it was definitely I was not surprised by the call. It seemed interesting to me in hindsight that I believe we talked about it last week, where Rhea's injury or injury announcement came like a couple of days after the pay-per-view, and it's just like this had to have still been on the table. Like, what were they thinking for the whole interim thing? And it's, yeah, I definitely would have taken a different look at a different champion if I had known that this was not going to be an interim championship and just be a championship. You know what I mean? Like, Chelsea Green seemed like a nice bridge to get back to Rhea Ripley being champion.
Well,
And
now Chelsea Green is more over than she's ever been in her life, and partially because of and you're burying the lead per promo. What a fucking heartfelt that damn promo, the promo of a lifetime from Chelsea Green. I mean, yeah, I mean it all was very melodramatic, you know, her leaving in tears, Nick's Chelsea wait and his big impassioned speech, but it all worked. This is, you know, sometimes this shit can't
it
be.
was soap opera 101 here.
Yeah.
Tearful goodbye, someone calls back,
Oh, yes.
you get the heartfelt moment. It had all the hallmarks of good TV here.
And of course, anytime you have a heartfelt moment on WWE TV, you can always count on Gunther to ruin it. Just the
Gunther again, one of the few people who keeps on staying heel and raining on people's parades, is a Gunther special, and this was another one. And I'll tell you what, I loved that both guys ended up wrestling in jeans in this match. I love that it was an impromptu match that everyone wasn't just happening to wear their trunks at that very moment.
That was fantastic. That I liked a lot. That and Gunther's line about Matt Cardona running in from catering, running out from catering. That was fantastic. But yes, no. That they have this impromptu match. That they're both in jeans and slacks. They're, you know, and they have a, you know, a full match. And of course, Cardona gets destroyed at the end. You know, Gunther gets a. I don't want to say a big win, but he gets a definitive, just he gets a definitive win, you know, completely reestablishing, you know, what he's all about, leading later to the segment where he and Finn Balor have a confrontation that is setting up, appears to be setting up a full feud between the two of them, which I completely endorse.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely needed to move on to something a little more substantial for Gunther here.
Well, you also got to rebuild him back towards being in serious contention after the summer of follies he went through.
He definitely has had it pretty bad over the course of the summer here.
Yeah.
Not been a hot boy summer for Gunther at all. Let's see what else. Just the inexplicable Baron Corbin return and run over the roster is much to our chagrin continuing. I think we both said that this was going to happen, and it did happen against Carmelo Hayes this go around.
Yeah. Baron Corbin beats someone else who's better than him. Yeah. I don't even know what to say anymore. I know it's, we're keeping Trick in the mix here, and you know, it appears we're gonna get another Trick Williams Baron Corbin match, where hopefully the title will go back this time. But this whole thing was just This has been one of the most unnecessary things. It's the most gobsmacking thing they've done in a year where you can question a lot of their creative decisions. The decision, first of all, just to bring Baron Corbin back at all, and then the decision to have him immediately become US champion while the crowd goes dead silent for anything he does. Just, all the Triple H just talk about earning your spot and all the bullshit he says during Unreal or doing those press conference things, which I can't believe they brought those back again. It's all such bullshit. You pick who you want. You know it. You're not as bad as your father-in-law, but you've got a lot of, you still have a lot of it. You still picked up a lot of his trash over 30 years.
Oof. We have definitely been through quite a few of those. Especially as of late, he has definitely fallen on too many VKM tropes in the recent past here, and it is not helping the product out in the least bit.
No, this is having your young stars beaten by this failure from from the previous era is just I can't even count the ways that it's just the wrong way to go about things.
I feel like there are better voices if you want to go on some type of a rebuild for these guys, like maybe have him more aim at the main championship or something like that. Like, feel like there's a better way to have him move on than him losing to Baron Corbin.
I mean, I think he'll get the
I
belt
don't think
back.
he's going there, but
You
oh.
know, yeah, because there's no place for him at the top right now either. So it's just like the
Oh.
US title could have, should have, and maybe in some ways still will be his thing for a bit. But it's gonna have this big, maybe when he gets the belt back, it's gonna have this big asterisk about it, right by it, that really stunted his momentum for no reason.
Oh. Yeah, it's something. It is something. Next up on the SmackDown docket, Kevin Owens, CM Punk have their second showdown in as many weeks here.
Yeah, and this is the one that I think they maybe cross the line into getting too inside. Crowd wants to cheer both guys. They're both being, again, this situation that, I mean, we keep repeating itself. These two people the crowd likes just both being complete assholes to the point where
Yep.
this Boston crowd, which in Boston crowds are usually pretty good, was dead silent during most of this, this segment hyping up, your main event championship match.
Yeah, it seemed like a bit of a rehash of the previous week in a lot of ways. Like, they said,
Definitely
hey, give
rehash.
it more context, and I don't feel like I really genuinely got any more context within
You're
the promo.
both petty. That's really what you get out of it. It's not how you want your superstars behaving. It really isn't. Unless that's their role, one of their roles as a heel is to be that petty and condescending and all that. This just crossed multiple lines, and we're left with a kind of confusing dynamic for the audience to follow.
Yeah, it's always one of those things where it's hard to cheer a guy coming back from an injury that kept him out a year and a half. Kevin Owens is definitely getting that return swell, general approval, happiness that, someone's back. Obviously, CM Punk has been a fan favorite, and even in, like you said, like the Roman Reigns feud has definitely been more on the babyface side of things. And not the heel side, even when he's not really, well, I guess that was the championship involved. But yeah, like, so yeah, it's a weird spot to put everyone in, quite frankly. Again, like, it's just, it feels like you can have this feud and avoid that. It doesn't, it doesn't seem like it should be. Yeah, I guess it's another Vinceism, making something more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess we can move on to the fact that another thing that I had forgotten about, because the comeback happened when I was on vacation, had forgotten that. Oh, why am I forgetting his name already? Who came back for the MFTs, and why am I blank? Haku.
Haku, yes.
Jesus
Ha
Christ.
well, yeah. Well, Haku came back for the first time since 2001.
That happened on that show, and I don't think they were
Yes.
really featured very much, or they were just kind of featured in passing the following week when I actually did watch. So this was another moment where I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot that this happened.
Yeah, no, that's
And sure
this has
enough,
happened.
it also paid off. Having Haku in their corner, Tama and Talatanga end up winning the tag team championships in a triple threat match here.
Yes, they did. They are the tag team champions now. The Damian Priest R-Truth title reign is over. And apparently the MFTs await a challenge from Shinsuke Nakamura and his new tag team partner. Which wouldn't surprise me if it ends up being Naraku already up from NXT, because the guy's like nearly 40 and there's no reason to keep him in NXT any longer. Guy's like 40 or anybody gets 40 or whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah, he is not a young gentleman. We can put it
No.
that. I don't have the wiki up right now, but I'll maybe go and check that out there. Yeah, he I've assumed ever since Shinsuke mentioned a tag team partner that it was going to be Naraku.
It makes sense. Probably a good role for both of them. Perfectly fine stuff.
There we go. 39. Yeah, in no way does he need to spend any more time down in NXT. Get him used to the cameras. Get him out of there. That was nonsense to start with.
No.
Yeah, Shinsuke wasn't doing anything. I don't think Naraku is going to make big waves in the singles division, honestly, at this point in his career either. It feels like them being a tag team is the best outcome for both of their careers in the WWE, honestly.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
So, last but not least here. Well, I guess it wasn't last, 'cause the Cody segment that we already talked about was last, but Tiffany Stratton takes on JC Jane for the women's, well, it defends the WWE Women's U.S. Championship against JC here. And, I mean, we kind of talked about this last week a bit because this match had already been booked. That it was strange to not have the leader of a group with a championship, especially when the tag team has a championship. And hey, sure enough, JC Jane ends up beating Tiffany Stratton here to take home the U.S. Women's Championship. There was definitely a little bit of chicanery at ringside here with Lainey Reid and Fallon Henley, and even Chelsea Green got involved in the situation
And
too.
we're missing the part where we missed the part earlier where Tiffany saved Chelsea
Oh,
from the Irresistible
yeah, Nia
Forces and got
Jax and
and it got destroyed.
Lash
Yes, for
Legend.
that. Yes, so she came into the match not 100%. Yes, and would lose the United States Championship to JC Jane. So all of Fatal Influence now has gold. So we're getting at least getting somewhere with this group.
Yeah, they have definitely gotten their engines re-revved after them getting cooled off for a couple of weeks there. Championships all around here. The tag teams are always a little bit easier to hang on to these days, since no tag division is very good in any company. Yeah, I mean, U.S. Championship seems like a good spot for JC Jane and people of her caliber at this point. Honestly, you know, like
Yeah.
it seems like a good slot to keep her in. And hey, if you want to move Tiffany back up to the main championship, I do not have a problem with that either.
No,
So.
that'd be perfectly acceptable as well.
I would imagine she'll end up getting some type of a return loss here because, you know, no one just walks away from a championship after one match, or at least it rare. I feel like it rarely
Right.
happens these days. So, moving on to Raw, more women's action here. Stephanie Vaquer comes out. Liv Morgan comes out, Becky Lynch comes out, and we almost have a repeat of the previous week's segment in a lot of
Yeah,
ways.
we do. This is getting very repetitive.
Becky and Stephanie don't really like each other. Liv is really taking advantage of their distrust of each other to continue to hit and run and still have the numbers game on her side, even though they should be a little bit closer to
Yeah,
even.
right. Yeah. And none of this is any more interesting than if they had just brought one of them back to challenge Liv Morgan.
I feel like this is going to be the problem for the entire length of this feud.
Yeah.
We can just put this like on a sound bite and just repeat it each and every week, and we'll just
Yeah.
take a break to go to the bathroom while we play the bit again.
Yeah. We probably do that quite a bit for quite a number of things. Unfortunately.
Not a lot to talk about with Javon Evans versus JD McDonagh,
No,
other than the
nothing.
fact that Javon won. And for the third week running here, Big Cass ends up attacking Javon after the match here.
Yeah. Except this time, Javon gets a little bit of offense until Dom Mysterio gets himself back involved, leading to Javon taking more damage from Big Cass. So, yeah, again, I don't hate it as much as Baron Corbin, for because there's not a title involved and he hasn't really beaten anybody yet. But again, it's just why? Yeah, and I just saw that the news came across this week that he turned 40. Like, I didn't even realize he was that old. Because his run wasn't that long ago, really, but I guess he was not that even that much of a spring chicken 10 years ago. Well, he's 30. I guess he was 30 10 years ago, but Yeah, but that was 10 years ago now. Jeez, my God. I don't think
Oh,
Enzo and Cass
yeah.
is that.
Just really just turned 40 here.
Yeah, so it's like what can...
The roster is still not getting younger.
No, it isn't. And having someone like Javon Evans
Yes.
again, because there's just no positive to doing Javon Evans versus Big Cass. There's no way you can believably do this match. Do this match. There's just there. Yeah, Javon Evans wins. People are gonna be like, "Well, that's not believable." And if Big Cass wins, well, plummeting even further does go down does going down goes Javon.
Yeah, not a lot of positive outcomes for this one.
No.
And 2013 debut in NXT for Big Cass.
Yeah.
Yeah, man's been somewhat on TV for the last 13 years then. So yeah, I too would have thought he was at least maybe in the late 30s category. But yeah, no, that is not in fact the answer. So yeah, that covers one thing. And what also should be unsurprising news, Rey Fénix has gotten his best push since becoming the cruiserweight champion down in AAA, because he continues to look decent on WWE TV. One of the few AAA champions that seems to get some dubs on WWE TV here, whether it be against Nathan Frazer or in this case against El Fiscal for the right to face Roman Reigns here at Raw Mexico City.
No. He's picking up some steam. Yeah.
Yep, still not enough to be the one that wins, but it is what it is. Continuing on the ladies' actions, Lyra Valkyria continuing her descent into craziness. Unfortunately for her, people still like, including management, still like Sol Ruka more.
To do what Lyra's doing to herself, for it to not really mean anything, that sucks. She's gotta not do her hair.
You gotta dress up like a bum, like you're doing a character. Almost 24/7. I feel like she arrived, like someone filmed one of those. This is how she arrived at the arena, and she still kind of looked disheveled. Like she's really throwing herself into this gimmick, and yeah, that's the part that makes me go, oof, man, like. You're going for it. Like this is one of those to me, you're trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit kind of situations, and she's still just getting chicken shit in return. Really, this is again one of those really nothing against Sol Ruka. It's nice for someone to be picking up dubs. But also in the same vein, oof, man, Lyra not in a great place. Up next, probably the second biggest thing on Raw here, we get a confrontation between Bron Breakker and Obafemi, with Paul Heyman being something of a moderator in this situation.
This is maybe the only really other really interesting segment on this show. Yeah, Paul trying to be the voice of reason for Bron Breakker, who just wanted to fight Obafemi right then and there, telling him no, we build this up, we understand box office, and the match is announced for Sunday night's main event. So already this Sunday night's main event is being built up with bigger matches than pretty much the rest of the Saturday Night's Main Events have been all year.
You pointed out a while ago, the WWE does not have an ESPN actual PLE this month, so they are loading up some other cards, and I feel like they've tried to load up the whatever night's main event cards. This one definitely feels like it's gonna live up to the billing in this case. I feel like the last one I was pretty much ready to skip.
The last two, I think, were definitely were very skippable. Even though the main one was a good show overall, but it had no big matches,
No.
nothing you couldn't really skip, no.
There was a another first round matchup here on Raw between Dragon Lee and El Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr. That is always a mouthful to try and get out behind this microphone here. Again, in unsurprising news, the mainly WWE talent in Dragon Lee ends up coming up with the dub in this situation.
Amazing how that's happening in this tournament. Everyone but Fake La Parka is a WWE full-time guy.
That is pretty wild. Sticking with some luchadors here, Rey Mysterio takes on Chad Gable. Rey and his knees still holding up after all these years. And it was an enjoyable match with a pretty predictable outcome here that Rey was going to do the job in this in this matchup to the newly crowned Chad Gable, who retains his Intercontinental Championship here.
No, good match. Not much more to say. I mean, again, there was a lot of wrestling on this show in comparison to a lot of weeks at WWE TV. There were only three key talking segments. And only two of them were actually good. So, this was a kind of a whole, the most interesting thing of the week happened on this show. But other than that, kind of a ho-hum edition in terms of advancement.
I'd agree that SmackDown probably moves stories along a little bit better as an overall whole.
That's been a sudden shift. Really post SummerSlam that. Raw has been less interesting than SmackDown. It had not been this been that way for years, it feels like.
I brought it up to start the show here. Did you watch AEW Collision this past Saturday, Christopher?
No, I did not. And I don't feel like anything happened that would make me regret my decision.
No. It's always one of those funny ones where I think that's why I end up not watching on a consistent basis. Because when I do take the time out, I'm like, oh, okay, nothing happens over here. And then I get suckered in. I know that I say it to Jeremy probably more than I say it to you, since we do the Dynamites. I sometimes get sucked in by the highlights that are talked about on Dynamite. And then, yeah, I do watch it. I'm just like, okay, it was definitely dominated by that. What is the the Continental Cup tournament matches.
Because we need two tournaments a year based around this silly championship.
Well, and it was something that I was trying to get out of Jeremy last week, and the only thing that I did end up remembering in the meantime, because I thought it was weird the timing for this Continental Cup matchup. And then it dawned on me why I remembered that it was weird to me. The last 2 years, AEW has come to Columbus when the Continental Classic is ongoing. And they've played at the comic one of the comic book conventions that's happening at the time in one of the theater rooms. And I'm like, oh, that's why this is striking me as even stranger than normal, because this isn't like that isn't something that's 6 months away. I want to say that they're normally here in November or early December. So, like, to me, if you're gonna do a tournament, you try to do it like 6 months out from your main tournament. So to me, it seems a little bit weird that you're gonna do this Continental Cup tournament and then turn around like in about 2 months and start up the Continental Classic itself. Just that it feels like weird.
And again, I mean, they get away with
I'm
it in the
shocked.
Continental
AEW
Classic.
is doing something weird and not thinking
Right.
forward.
I don't, they get away with it in the Continental Classic, but for the Continental Cup, having Moxley defending his championship in a tournament instead of being the prize at the end of the tournament, again, just a very weird choice. Just something they needed to throw together, I guess, to get, for a match at Wembley.
Yeah, that really seems to be what the main thing, the main outcome is here. Yeah, so I think that's about it. Since there wasn't anything to talk about, I was just kind of doing a quick buzz through. But yeah, I mean, it is wild that in their 2 hour show they got through eight matches, and Raw's 2.5 hours, and it was five matches.
And that felt like a big, like a more wrestling heavy show than usual.
So there's something in there if you want it to be. For me, it's nothing more than what it is. Bell time beer of the show here. This is from Cinderlands in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Squish Hazy Pale Ale. My younger brother shared with me one of their 12 packs, and they have four different beers that are under the Squish title. And I believe this is the lightest. I believe they're all hazies. B, this is the only pale ale. I believe the others are IPAs or double IPAs. This will be a continuing beer listen here. Cinderlands does have some good stuff. They are in downtown Pittsburgh. Should one take in a game, either for the Penguins or the Steelers, or even hey, the Pirates are still around. You can go to Cinderlands, not too far from the stadiums there, and have a good beverage. Yeah, quality stuff. This Squish is definitely a solid pale ale. I don't know. It's always one of those interesting things. I like a regular pale ale more than I like a hazy pale ale, but I probably like a hazy IPA better than I like a regular IPA. I don't know why it works out that way
I
exactly.
oh oh hazy IPAs are IPAs without the aftertaste, without the aftertaste.
Yeah, I do not like the pininess as much as some people amongst us, Jeremy. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I would think that I think because the hops are light enough in a pale ale to start with, that I don't feel like I'm chewing on pine cones even when they do a little bit of a piney pale ale kind of situation. Like the taste is still light enough that it's not too aggressive for me. So I think that's probably what it is. And I think maybe there's just not enough hop flavor still in a hazy pale ale for whatever reason. Maybe they just don't cook the hops quite as long. I'm not sure. I know the hazy process is very short to start with, but I'm not sure exactly what they're doing. So, anywho, wow, real breakdown of hazies and regular IPAs here to end the show. So, Bell Time beer suggestion for Matt DeFrango 11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Download us at other places like YouTube Music and iHeartRadio. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.